The Strong Arm Story of the Day is brought to you by John Foyt Associates Personal Injury Law.
It is Dukes and Bell. We're live at Twin Peaks. This hour brought to you by All Four Seasons Garage and Entry Doors. We will discuss more about the Falcon angle to this game on Sunday night. But we like to go behind enemy lines, and that is with Matt Derrick, who is with ChiefsDigest.com. All right, Matt, I want to start with the struggles, and maybe that's not the right word, what we've seen in the red zone from the Chiefs. I think there are 5 red zone appearances, 2 touchdowns so far in this season.
And same as us, right?
Yeah, 40%. I just feel like that number would be higher. What do you feel about and what do you think about what's going on with this team in the red zone?
Yeah, it's been feast or famine sometimes for the Chiefs in the red zone, and there's no doubt they're most effective in the red zone when they can run the football, and that's been kind of the challenge so far early this season. Haven't been a lot of opportunities for them to really get the run game established in the red zone. They ran the ball very effectively against the Bengals on their opening drive, took it down to, I think, the 6-yard line, and from there they had 4 carries for 4 yards after that. Couldn't really punch it in. But again, I mean, that's when they're most effective, is when they can run it, because they get a little bit more one-dimensional, and sometimes they end up getting too cute for their own good. I mean, one of their conversions on Sunday was a touchdown pass to a backup left tackle. So that kind of tells you about the Chiefs' red zone woes in a nutshell.
Well, we definitely don't want to see Travis Kelce get straight and get right against us. Matt Derrick with us from ChiefsDigest.com. We saw on that opening game against the Ravens, I guess it was funny, the other tight end got all the juice. It was almost like he was like the world's most expensive decoy in that game.
Yeah, and, you know, it's always been this way. The teams bracket Travis Kelce. They do everything to take him out. But I think you're talking about with the Ravens and the Bengals, two teams in particular who are very familiar with Travis Kelce. They have seen him a lot, and their game plans absolutely were let anybody else beat you. Just simply don't let Travis Kelce beat you. But certainly the Ravens, you know, it backfired on them a little bit. They took that to the point where Xavier Worthy was able to go off for a couple of touchdowns on them. I think that woke up the Bengals a little bit. They were able to shut down Worthy last week as an alternative. But the reality is that the Chiefs are getting a lot of other receivers, whether it's Worthy, Rashee Rice, you name it, getting some one-on-one matchups, because, you know, Travis Kelce is still drawing all of the attention. He's not doing the production. That's mostly because he's just been bracketed and taken out of the plays. But you're right. I mean, he has kind of been the most expensive decoy the first couple of weeks. And I think the only frustrating thing for the Chiefs is that they've been inconsistent with their receivers as far as being able to make plays in those situations when they are seeing so many one-on-one matchups on the outside.
Matt, what does the Pacheco injury mean for the Chiefs heading into Sunday's matchup with the Falcons?
Yeah, it means a lot of questions, because, you know, their most experienced running back that's going to be playing on Sunday is Samaje Perine, who's only been with the team for a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. The guy who's been with the team the longest is Keontae Ingram, who has been on the practice squad since last season and has never played in NFL games. And then you've got there's likely starter Carson Steele, who's going to be making his, you know, playing his third NFL game of his career as an undrafted free agent. There's just not a lot of experience. They're going to have to lean a little bit on Perine, particularly in third downs. But, you know, hey, in Carson Steele, at least they have somebody who is the same kind of flavor as Isaiah Pacheco. Certainly doesn't have the experience, but, you know, Carson Steele has become a fan favorite already.
Right.
If for no other reason, because he has a pet alligator,
Crocky.
Named Crocky J, exactly, which is exactly what you name a pet alligator. So, you know, he's become a folk hero already, but he's a hard runner. You know, he is very difficult to bring down after contact. It'll be interesting to see what he can do in a full body of work. You know, he had a fumble on Sunday, hasn't had a lot of opportunities yet, so it's going to be a little bit of a learning curve for him, and especially just to see how much of a workload he's asked to carry on Sunday.
It is the Dukes and Bell Guys live at Twin Peaks here in Kennesaw. We do it every week, going behind enemy lines with Matt Derrick from ChiefsDigest.com. As we like to say, the chefs, great googly moogly. So the defense, certainly we know that you got some dudes that can get after it in Karlaftis, Chris Jones. What did you think? I mean, I think your Chiefs fans kind of like, whoa, this Falcon team kind of pulled one out of there, took us on Monday night, because we're just worried about protecting our quarterback. We struggled against a guy like T.J. Watt in week 1.
Yeah, and no doubt. I mean, I think that's one of the things that Chiefs fans are certainly looking forward to, is they're thinking that, hey, this should be an opportunity for Chris Jones and George Karlaftis to maybe get going this week. Chiefs have had some struggles generating some pass rush through the first couple of games, and has been kind of inconsistent. Chris Jones, I mean, you're going to have to double and triple team Chris Jones. That's just all there is to it. He's been a wrecking force the first couple of games, and once again, the Ravens and Bengals familiar with him, so they've been prepared for it, but there's a couple of times when Chris Jones takes over a game and decides, nope, we're getting to the quarterback on this one, and he's going to go through anybody you put out there. He's the guy that you have to worry about, but there's no doubt. I mean, if you can neutralize Chris Jones, that's a big part of the Chiefs' pass rush. It's a tough task, but if you can do that, you know, yeah, I mean, the Chiefs really aren't getting a lot out of anybody who's not named George Karlaftis right now. And they've only been playing 8 defensive linemen. They haven't been going very deep. So it's also affected a little bit of their stamina throughout a game. Playing in a dome would probably help, because it was, when I got in my car after practice today, it was 97 degrees. So I know those defensive guys have not had a lot of fun practicing this week outside.
Roof is open, which is great with what you're talking about. Hopefully it wears them down. We're talking about the Chiefs behind enemy lines with Matt Derrick. Spagnola, how much is he blitzing, and how much do you think he's going to blitz Kirk Cousins after seeing what he saw with the Eagles?
Yeah, that's a good question, because, you know, Spags brought up the question this week himself about, you know, he's heard the talk that maybe Kirk Cousins isn't as mobile as he used to be. He said he just doesn't see it, so he thinks Kirk Cousins looks fine. But there's no doubt. I mean, that's what Steve Spagnuolo does. He's going to blitz, and he's going to blitz at what he thinks is the most opportune time. And, you know, a blitz is really what helped the Chiefs steal that game against the Bengals on the third down situation. They had Shamari Connor coming on a blitz that got the sack that needed to get off the field and put that game away, set them up for the game-winning field goal. So, you know, yeah, that's what you have got to deal with, because especially right now with the Chiefs, since that front four is struggling to get anything going with production-wise, they're going to have to lean on the linebackers, safeties, and corners to bring blitzes, and that's exactly what Steve Spagnuolo will do. And he knows, he's familiar with Kirk Cousins. He's been around him for a while. He's faced him before. So he knows that, you know, a key to that has got to be able to throw Kirk, you know, some unscouted looks, to do some things that maybe they haven't done before, just so he's not prepared for it. Because, you know, Kirk's been around long enough. He's seen just about everything.
It's Matt Derrick, guys, from ChiefsDigest.com. The big picture, as you guys go for back-to-back-to-back, and no one's done that in the modern era, obviously, for Super Bowls, it just seems like, Matt, you guys, I say like the Giants with Eli, they could maybe throw a switch. Because Carl and I probably said this a few times this summer, nobody looked worse than the Chiefs in that Raiders loss at Arrowhead. And then to come back and just make the run, especially the two road victories in the playoffs, is just insane. It's almost like they've just got that innate ability to get it in gear.
They really do. I mean, it feels that way. And especially as, you know, when they make these runs every single year, whether it's to the Super Bowl or not, it's wearing. I mean, I think that's part of it. You know, at first, you know, once they kind of get into this role a little bit, it was like, okay, this team gets to a point where it just turns it on in December. That's been kind of an Andy Reid, you know, Patrick Mahomes kind of mantra. You know, it's December is when it really starts to matter. Last year, got to December 1st, and it didn't really kick on until you said that Christmas Day loss to the Raiders that woke them up, and then after that, it was just lights out. And one thing is that the defense was that way all season last year. I mean, the defense came to play every single week. It was the offense that really struggled last year. And, you know, after December 1st, Mahomes and that offense really got to the point where they were getting the job done. I mean, it wasn't necessarily 350 yards every week from Mahomes, but it was just the big plays at the right time. And that's kind of still what they're doing. You know, what really fascinates me is the rest of the league is, you know, right now fascinated with all these, you know, too high safety looks and the shells that defenses are playing that everybody's kind of crediting for really slowing down the passing games. Well, Chiefs have been dealing with this for 4 years. I mean, it's nothing new to them. They've been hearing about this forever. So they've been trying to solve that riddle, and at times they have, but you know, there's no doubt. I mean, I think as good as Mahomes is, he has higher gears. It's not he can find an extra gear when he has to, when he needs one. And I think he even saw it, you know, on Sunday against the Bengals. He converted a fourth and six that had a penalty, and then he converts a 4th and 16 through a penalty. I mean, that's just what the guy seems to do every single week.
Last thing for you, as we talk to Matt Derrick, Chiefs win this game if, Falcons win this game if.
I think that the Chiefs win this game if, frankly, they just don't make mistakes. Turned over the football 3 times against the Bengals, and that could have really cost them. Mahomes has had a couple of kind of clumsy turnovers through the first couple of games. If he doesn't turn the football over, they don't put it on the ground, don't make mistakes with some penalties, they should roll. I mean, this is I think the Chiefs are the better team on both sides of the football. The Falcons win, I think, if Bijan Robinson gets loose and has a good game. I think that's one of the things that the Chiefs want to do every single week whenever they face a running back of Robinson's caliber is what Steve Spagnuolo says, kill the engine. If you can stop the run game, if you can stop the lead back of a guy like Bijan, that's the key to victory. But if he's able to get going and the Falcons can control the tempo, control the number of possessions, I think you can get into a low-scoring battle with the Chiefs, and I think that's how you beat them. You can't boat race them. You can't try and outrace Patrick Mahomes, but can you control the tempo with the run game? Yeah, you can sometimes, and if they can get that going and keep the Chiefs' defense on their heels, then the Falcons can pull it off.
Great stuff, Matt Derrick. Thank you so much. ChiefsDigest.com as we preview tonight's matchup, Sunday night matchup, here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Thanks again.
Appreciate it, guys. Take care.
Hey, Carl, as we said earlier, I mean, there's things that we know what they do, and hopefully we're starting to see some of the things we're going to be able to do, which is get all our playmakers involved. So hopefully we're going to be in this, and maybe the confidence, as we've said all week, of winning a game like that in Philly lets you know you can hang with anybody, including the world champs.
All right. Braves need to win, too, this weekend, and we're going to talk to Grant McCauley about that next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Let's talk to Grant McCauley as we go around the yard. And, Mike, before we do, we got to give a big shout-out to one of our best listeners. It's actually the family that listens to us. But, man, are these bracelets cool that the kid brought
us?
Hey,
thanks to young Henley. Remember we had Henley on the show here about a year ago and asked about the Falcons. He goes, nope, not going to happen. And, of course, that was when we had Desmond Ritter. But a really great young man who plays travel ball. And in a way to cover his travel ball expenses, he's selling these homemade bracelets. I'm about to post the photos he made up for the Dukes and Bell with Hey Man on it in the Falcons colors. We got to wear these for good luck on Sunday night,
man. I agree, man. Thank you so much.
Beautiful Grant, family. They look like the family that the picture frame comes with.
No, they do. They do. I totally agree. It's like, who are they? All right, Grant McCauley, what's going to happen with this series this weekend, man? We need dubs. Tell me how you're feeling. I know that the Dodgers just beat up on the Marlins and Shohei had an amazing night and all of that. But, you know, I don't take anything for granted, and I'm not going to just say we waltz in here and sweep these guys, although I feel like we should.
Yeah, they definitely should, and I think anything less than a sweep is going to be a disappointment. There's really just no other way to look at it. I'm not usually the person that points to series and says, yeah, sweep here, sweep there, sweep. It doesn't usually work that way, and a lot of times when you set yourself up like that, there is going to be, at least at some point, some kind of a letdown. But look, the Braves have 9 games left. They're playing a club that has been 10, 20, 30 games under 500 basically for the better part of this year. A club that doesn't really have a whole lot to offer. And as we saw last night, and not to get lost in the Shohei Ohtani of it all, but Goodness gracious, I mean, 6 hits, 3 homers, 2 doubles, 10 runs batted in, 17 total bases. You steal 2 more. You go 50-50. You break the Dodgers single-season home run record, and your club clinches a playoff berth. I mean, can you do much more in one night?
Right. You know, Grant, as we've been going round and round about the limitations of the roster, it's so good to see the stars really showing out. You know, you talked about Money Harris, Matt Olson's been raking, and we get Ozzie tonight. So, you know, we saw Ozzie raking in Gwinnett in a small sample size. Can Ozzie hit the ground running?
Hopefully so. I mean, the fact that he was able to pick up 4 quick hits, including a home run and 8 at-bats at AAA, and be ready to go. I mean, and now all of a sudden, as we were talking about, at least you have a couple of options, things you can think about on the infield if you want to mix and match a couple of things as well. But I think that there's just something to be said for, yes, the player you're getting back based on the stats on the on the sheet, but also the person and the player that you're getting and what he means to this club. And I think that's where Ozzie can really, even if he doesn't hit the ground running immediately and, you know, star in the offense, where he can make his contributions and be out there, and the club can kind of get the boost of getting one of their best teammates back.
Do we see anything different with the lineup considering the circumstances? Do you think Snit plays around with it, or no? I'm just rolling my guys out.
There's not a lot to change. I mean, you got to figure out where you want to put Ozzie on a regular basis. Could that, you know, could he ultimately end up in the two spot when he's not switch hitting? I don't really know. I would probably consider it against a lefty, but you've got to figure out what you want to do with Harris and Soler, who are now both swinging the bat well. Got Marcel at three, you got Olsen at four. I think that Ozzie makes a ton of sense at five, and that may just be where he lands. After that, I really don't know that there's much that you're looking to improve upon. I mean, if you got Travis d'Arnaud in, he's going to bat a little bit higher than maybe a Sean Murphy will, but you know where Urshela is going to be, and you know where Arcia is going to be. And that, and Laureano could also factor maybe in that six or seven spot as well on days that Travis d'Arnaud is not catching. He's been hitting the ball extremely well and has been a nice pickup for this club.
It is our man Grant McCauley, guys, as the Bravos taking on, again, a team they've got to beat. The Marlins are bad. And we've done, I know, Grant, we spent a lot of time the last few weeks talking about, you know, beating inferior opponents, but this is when they've got to sweep. They've got to.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, how impressed were you with what the Mets did last night with, I mean, a real power display?
Yeah, I mean, the Mets have been playing great baseball for the better part of three-plus months at this point. I mean, this is not a mirage. It's not an optical illusion. It's not the soft part of their schedule. They're going out there and playing some very good baseball. So you can't take anything away from them. I will say, you know, Taijuan Walker is about as white flag as it gets for a starter on a contending club. I don't know that the Phillies can keep doing that. I mean, he has been awful. And they gave him a ton of money, which I never understood. But if that's the worst thing that they're dealing with, I guess they can live with it. But all of a sudden, the Phillies went from being that club that you felt like had a pretty good hold on best record in baseball and that home field advantage to now having to watch what the Dodgers are doing and watch what the Brewers are doing so that they'll know if they're actually going to get home field advantage.
Grant, I do want you to address what Shohei did last night. Single greatest game? I have no debates about that. Dude drives in 10, you know, three home runs.
It's like stats from a doubleheader.
Yes, but
yeah, I mean,
I don't take away from that, but, you know, somebody hit me up today and they said, Dukes, it was the Marlins. Okay, he still had to go do it.
Is
it
the matter.
Is it the single greatest game that we've ever seen?
No, it's. I would say this. It's way up there with all the guys that hit four home runs typically, because when you have a guy that has 17 total bases in a game, usually you've got to hit four home runs to do that. Shohei did it with three home runs and two doubles, so congratulations and good for him. And obviously six hits on the night will certainly do it. He's the only guy, I mean, none of the guys who hit four home runs in a single game ever stole a couple of bases, so there's that.
Right.
Knocking
right.
in 10 runs in a night, also a big deal. As I mentioned, he became the Dodgers single-season home run leader. But oddly enough, not the most total bases in a game by a Dodger, because Sean Green, who had the 49 homers, the previous record, he had a four-homer game in that season, so he still holds on to that. But honestly, there's not much that Shohei Ohtani can't do at the plate this year. There's obviously something to be said when he's the dual threat that he is working so hard to get back to. But as far as putting on a show in literal, figurative, and all pun intended, that was about as good a show as you're going to see.
I don't want to sound, as we said to start the show, like a bunch of homers. You know, it just seems like, yes, it's an amazing accomplishment and it stands on its own. It just feels like we just didn't get enough juice for what Ronald Acuna did last year. Maybe that's why we're in our bag about it. You know,
yeah, and, I mean, other, I wouldn't disagree with that.
Right, and
I wouldn't disagree with that.
Go ahead, Grant.
Yeah, I mean, just because it's Shohei Ohtani, and I've said this on my show a lot, and I think that people just need to recognize and appreciate and marvel at the greatness that we are watching with certain players in certain eras. And he checks all the boxes for that, and he's done things already in his career that really nobody in the modern game or otherwise has ever been capable of doing. So it doesn't detract from his greatness to also celebrate someone else and vice versa. But I think
sure.
we do get very, you know, tribal, if you will, on which team is our team, which team do we follow more specifically. But if you're asking me, and I know you did yesterday, which season was the better all-around one, Ronald Acuna Jr. hit 40 points higher, had a 40-point higher on base percentage, had 200-plus hits, led the league in runs scored and stolen bases on top of going 40-70 and driving in 100 runs from the leadoff spot. That's a pretty great season, and he didn't do it as a DH. He did it as an everyday player.
Hands down. I can't add anything to it. I think, again,
Put a Yankees uniform on it, and
well,
now maybe you got the story.
We
I don't know.
Saw it. We saw it firsthand, and I think, again, you know, the fact that Ohtani is a Dodger does help. It just does.
Yep.
Grant, We appreciate you, man. When are you on this weekend? What's going on this weekend, man?
I'll be on tomorrow from 4 to 6. We'll obviously be talking about the wild card and the run ahead for the Braves, previewing that series against the New York Mets. And, yeah, Shohei Ohtani's probably going to come up a time or three on the show as well, because we got to talk about what he's been doing and what that will factor into the playoff race as far as what the Dodgers and other teams have got happening. So 4 to 6 right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and you can also find From the Diamond wherever you get your podcasts.
Good stuff, man. We'll see what happens. Hopefully Monday we're talking about a sweep. Thank you so much, Grant.
Thanks, guys.
Coming up, what did Bijan Robinson say about this offense heading into Sunday night? Grady talking about Patrick Mahomes. It's all on the way as we continue to preview Sunday night football right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
At Twin Peaks in Kennesaw. Come on, have a Hey Man Ale, man.